Jesus said to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" And I wonder, am I the only one at least slightly bothered by Jesus' words to Peter at the close of our passage today? "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" I don't mean to say that I'm bothered by Jesus pointing out the reality of little faith, or even pointing out the reality of doubt. Those are just facts of our life. What I mean to say is, I'm troubled at just when Jesus says these words today. And I'm finding them difficult to understand in their context. Consider with me, if you will, our scene once again in our gospel reading. Jesus has just sent his disciples out on a small boat into the center of a sea. A sea that, due to its low-lying position in a valley and the fact that it's surrounded by hills, is notorious for rather sudden and violent storms. And sure enough, as the sun sets, a squall arises on the sea, and the disciples find themselves battered and bullied by winds and waves. In fact, in the Greek, the word is actually tortured. Matthew writes, they were being tortured by the sea. And just then, after struggling through the night in their 16-foot sloop, a shadowy figure suddenly appears on the sea, walking towards them, walking atop the waters. It's a sight so frightening, they think they're seeing a ghost. The wind and the waves are one thing, but this ghastly, ghostly figure headed straight towards them is quite another. And so for the first time that night, Matthew records, they cried out in fear. To which Jesus responds, "Take heart, it is I." Or more literally, "Take heart, I am. Do not be afraid." Which, to be honest, is almost a comical thing to say, given how absolutely outrageous this entire scene is. I'm not sure the knowledge that it's Jesus out there is any more comforting to them than it was that they thought they were seeing a ghost. Not to mention, who can honestly say if that's really Jesus out there on the sea saying, "Take heart"? How do they know it's not Davy Jones and his crew come to lure them into the sea, perhaps? And so we come to Peter, who, rather prudently in my mind, calls out to this ghost for a little bit of proof. Only, because it's Peter, and because Peter can be a bit daft at times, he doesn't ask for something sensible for proof, like, "If it's really you, Lord, tell me what I had for breakfast this morning." Or something like, "If it's really you, tell me what Philip's middle name is." Rather, the brash, impetuous, speak first, think later, Peter shouts out across the sea, "Lord, if it's you, bid me to come in, into the storm, into the waves, into the wind." And I gotta say, Peter may be a bit daft at times, but this guy's got guts. And so, hearing Peter's request, Jesus says, "Come." And that wild fisherman, for reasons I cannot entirely comprehend, swings his legs over the side of that boat and hops in, into the middle of a storm on the Sea of Galilee. When the dawn has not yet fully dispelled the darkness of night, Peter jumps in. And for one shining, glorious moment, he stands atop that sea. One step, two, closer and closer to Jesus. Until those Galilean winds and waves capture his imagination once again, and he suddenly sinks like the rock he is. Peter sinks so fast, he only has time for three words. Lord, save me. And of course, Jesus does. Pulling Peter to the boat so his buddies can haul him by the armpits up and over the edge and onto the surface of that small ship. At which point, Jesus says, you of little faith, why did you doubt? Which seems to me about the most absurd question I can imagine in that particular moment. Let me put it this way. Do you have those old videos, footage of your children or grandchildren, nieces or nephew, saying their first words or taking their first steps? Do you guys have these things? We've got tons of them. First moments in our child's lives, we were so excited to witness, we felt compelled to save them on video. What stands out to me is that when we go back and watch them, it's not just the amazing moments that are recorded on that video, but in the background, there's also the over-the-top, overdone, outlandish reactions of the parents in those videos, the reactions that Lisa and I offer. And it's comical listening to us. Cohen says something like, Baga, and we're certain he's just quoted Shakespeare. Was that Hamlet? I think that was Hamlet. What did he say? He's a genius. He takes his first steps. We're on the phone with the Guinness Book of World Records wondering if there's ever been a kid as amazing as this. I suspect I'm not the only one in the room who did that when their kids took first steps and said their first words. So perhaps you can sympathize. Our loved ones achieve some small feat and we can't stop gushing over it. We're like a fire hose drenching our children in oohs and ahs and let's enroll them in Harvard right away. We can't help ourselves. Which is exactly why Jesus' words are so startling to me today. Because Jesus does none of that. In fact, just the opposite. Despite the fact that Peter has just walked on water, Jesus turns to him in the boat and says, you of little faith, why did you doubt? When I was expecting Jesus to say something more like, Parent Kevin or Parent Lisa, that was awesome. What a start. Next time, let's try for 10 steps. But what we get instead from Jesus is something similar to, is that all you got, Peter? And I, for one, find those words bewildering. Why did you doubt? Are you kidding me? Peter just stepped out onto the sea in the midst of a storm in the only set of dry clothing that man had with him. And not only did he not immediately sink, he actually took a few steps. You call that doubt? I'm not sure anyone has ever demonstrated such faith as Peter did in that moment. To this day, apart from God incarnate, Peter still holds the undisputed world record for the number of steps on water without sinking, because no one else has ever made it past zero. And yet, Jesus says, you have little faith. Why did you doubt? Which feels like saying to eight-month-old Cohen, what, no cartwheels? Come on, kid. Jesus' response to Peter is so perplexing, half of me wonders if Matthew simply misrecorded it. In what world is any amount of walking on water a sign of little faith and doubt? So, all that being said, what are we to make of this passage today? How are we to account for Jesus' rather stupefying statement? Well, as one biblical scholar puts it, what if there's more to this story than simply walking on water? That is, without denying the literal details of this event, what if Matthew's purpose in telling this story is actually to share it as a parable? And what if Jesus' question to Peter is not about walking on water at all, but rather walking on faith. But what might that even mean? Let me ask you this. What is your personal comfort level with large bodies of deep water? Having grown up a stone's throw from the Puget Sound, I can think of nothing more enjoyable than a long cruise through the ocean or the sea, perhaps the Mediterranean or the Caribbean. Lisa, my wife, on the other hand, having grown up in landlocked Iowa, where the largest body of water around her is the Wapsipinicon River, which at certain points is about 6 feet wide and 6 feet deep, can think of no vacation she'd rather avoid than a cruise on the Caribbean, or anywhere else for that matter. You guys keep telling her cruises are awesome. She's not buying it. And Lisa's not alone. You see, for first century Jews, the sea, as we've discussed in the past, is not merely a sea. Do you recall this? It's not a place where one goes to vacation or party or relax. Rather, the sea in the first century world is an ancient symbol of the primordial abyss, the void, the darkness. The sea, in the other words, is a symbol of chaos. It's the abode of the demonic forces of the world. All the violence, the injustice, the oppression, the terror that mar God's good creation, each of these is symbolized by the sea. So that to speak of a stormy sea, as Matthew does today, is to speak of a world gone horribly awry. A world not unlike our own. Which is why Psalm 65 promises God will still the roaring of the sea, the roaring of the waves, the turmoil of the nations. And Isaiah 43 proclaims, it is God who will ultimately make a way in the sea, a path in overwhelming waters. Meaning, as Matthew describes Jesus walking atop the sea today, this is not simply a story about Jesus defying gravity. It's about cosmic realities as well. And the deeper point is that this man, Jesus, and the kingdom of peace he's come to preach is the antidote to the violent sea that threatens to drown each and every one of us. Such that when Peter steps out of that boat, boats, by the way, being another ancient symbol for the church, when Peter steps out of the safe confines of his community and into the tumultuous sea that is our world, the question is not, can he walk on water? The question is, will he trust that walking in the peaceable way of Christ can keep him afloat in this tumultuous world? Recall that Peter's fundamental doubts, Peter's primary doubt throughout the Gospel of Matthew is not that Jesus is the Messiah, that he is the first to proclaim. He doesn't doubt who Jesus is. His doubt, rather, as you will recall, is that the cross of Christ is capable of overcoming the violent chaos of this world. He doubts it so much, he even tells Jesus, "You will never go to a cross." You remember what Jesus says in response. Peter's biggest challenge, in other words, is not belief, it's trust in Jesus' way. And that, I'd like to suggest to you, is precisely the point of the lived parable in Matthew's story today. When Jesus asks Peter why he doubts, he doesn't mean, why can't you walk on water any better? Walking on water has never been a test of discipleship, and thank God. What he means is, why did you doubt that walking in my way is sufficient to confront the winds and waves of this life? And that question is, of course, not for Peter alone. Jesus asks it of you and me as well, which, in the end, is probably why I find this question so troubling. Will we trust in Jesus' peaceable way too? Trust that in the midst of this raging sea that is our world, the way of peace will prevail. Will we practice peace when all around us is tumultuous chaos? Will we proclaim peace even when the winds and waves of the critics say it's just not possible to live like Jesus lived? Will we trust that the peaceable way of Christ is in fact the means by which God has chosen to calm the storm? And honestly, I don't know. I mean, I'll try. But I know I'm prone to my own doubts in this regard too, just like Peter. Which brings us finally to this. The great good news of this passage is not simply that Christ's peaceable way is mightier than the violence of the sea. The good news is also that when I do not trust that, when, like Peter, I sink, that's not the end of the story either. Because even then, Jesus reaches out a hand to save and hauls me back into the boat so that I might try and then try and then try again, knowing that the winds and waves still know that man's name. Amen.